Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East. The very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conqueror's Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.
When Khosroes, the king of the Persians, was brought in by the Ladzoi to Petra, he made haste to send an army of Persians there, who were to take possession of these fortresses and settle down to garrison them. But the Roman soldiers succeeded in learning this in advance, and, anticipating him, set fire to the houses and razed the walls to the ground, and then, with no hesitation, embarked in small boats and sailed directly to the city of Trebizond on the opposite mainland. Thus, while they harmed the Roman Empire by the destruction of the fortresses, at the same time they gained for it a great advantage in that the enemy did not take over the land. As a result of their action, the Persians returned empty-handed to Petra. Thus, then, did this take place.
Thank you to Umberto from So You Think You Can Rule Persia. Gamarjoba, and welcome to the History of Sakartvelo, Georgia. I'm your host, Roberto, and this is episode 37, The Final Siege of Petra, Phase 1. In this episode, we will dive into the Siege of Petra. I want to thank my Patreon members who have been amazing as always with their continued support. This show couldn't run without you. I'm going to give you all a shout out now. Thanks to Audrey Neeson, Mark Lemke, Andrew Schneider, Mitchell Dutt, Eric Nicholson from Ranking 76, Gerald Eliezer, Hallie Kuntz from Quest Friends, Quinn Campagna from Noblesse Oblige, Mandy Robertson, who is our amazing artist, and David Montgomery from The Siecle. You are all amazing, and I value each and every one of you. The sun beat down on the fortress of Petra. Inside the fort, Persians watched and waited as the Romans came along and dug a trench along the fortifications. The Roman commander, Bessus, who had replaced Agistaios due to the latter's inability to make a decisive victory over the Persians in a second siege of Petra, decided that finding a way to breach the walls from underground would be best. However, the hard rock proved to be a match to the Roman pickaxes, and they could go no further, until they made a crucial discovery. The Persians did not follow the original plan when they rebuilt the walls after the second siege of Petra. Instead, the Persians filled the space that Dagestanios had excavated with gravel, and laid heavy timbers upon them to use as a base for the walls. This new foundation is what Bessas had uncovered with his trenches. Bessas ordered the Romans to continue their excavation under the timbers, and they were able to damage the walls, and even brought the walls down in some places. However, the walls collapsed in on themselves and acted as a large barrier, despite not being as tall as the remaining walls around them. This left the Romans perplexed, and at a loss at what to do next. They couldn't even use their ram, since the walls were on a slope, and their siege engine needed a perfectly flat ground to be used. And this is where diversity in the Roman armies fit in, as they had a small number of the troops from the Sabaeroea tribe. The Sabaeroea commanders took a look at the situation, and they knew exactly what they needed. According to Procopius, quote, "These Sabaeroi improvised the ram, not in a customary form, but using a new method of their own innovation. They did not put beams into this engine, either upright or transverse, but they bound together some thick rods and fitted them in place everywhere instead of the beams. Then they covered the entire engine with hides and so kept the shape of a ram, and hung a single beam by loose chains, as is customary, in the center of the engine. Its head was made sharp and covered with iron like the barb of a missile, as it was intended to deal repeated blows to the circuit wall. They made the engine so light that it no longer had to be dragged or pushed along by the men inside, but 40 men who were also going to draw back the beam and thrust it forward against the wall, being inside the engine and concealed by the hides, could carry the ram upon their shoulders with no difficulty." Book 8, Chapter 11, Lines 29-31 in the Wars of Justinian. End quote. The Sabaeroi made three of these engines for the Roman armies. Three groups of 40 Roman men manned the modified engines from the inside, while the rest of the army kept the guise of those being the normal engines that they used. The ones outside of the engines carried poles with hook-shaped irons on them. As the Romans damaged the wall with the modified ram, the men outside could use the hooks to pull down the dislodged stones and create an access point to the walls. If this plan worked, they could capture Petra easily. However, the Persians weren't just sitting there twiddling their thumbs. They had built a wooden tower along the wall and placed their most ferocious men within it, who were dressed the same way I wanted to be dressed in high school, with a set of heavy armor protected by iron spikes. Ha, the real dream. Anyways, in that tower they had pots filled with sulfur, bitumen, and something that Procopius called Medea's oil. Very ominous. Very ominous indeed.
Hello and bonjour. My name is Josh Zucker, and I want to take you on a journey through some of the most exciting events of the late Middle Ages. Valois-Burgundy was one of the medieval world's greatest what-ifs. Its dukes inherited, conquered, and politicked their way into forging a state between the German Empire and the Kingdom of France that rivaled them both. From the Hundred Years' War to the Holy Roman Empire, from urban workers to Joan of Arc, and from gallant knights to gunpowder weapons, the Grand Dukes of the West had a part to play in almost all of Western Europe's biggest developments in the 14th and 15th centuries. If you want to learn more about the glamorous rise and dramatic fall of the Dukes of Burgundy, please join me for Grand Dukes of the West, A History of Valois-Burgundy.
Hello, everybody. This is Trevor Cully, host of the History of Persia podcast. From about 550 to 330 BC, most of the Middle East was ruled by the Achaemenid Persians. The Achaemenids pioneered the concept of a truly multinational empire, which incorporated people from as far away as India and Greece for over 200 years. The story of Persia discusses the fall of ancient civilizations, the origins of endurance racing, 300 Spartans, the March of the 10,000, and at least one evil priest who replaced and impersonated the king, all before falling with the dramatic close at Alexander the Great's conquests. If that story, and the story of the cultures that surround it, sound interesting to you, check out The History of Persia at historyofpersiapodcast.com, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
The Persians dumped all these materials onto the men surrounding the siege engines and set them ablaze. Luckily, the siege engines contained hides that protected the men, and the ones outside of the siege engines did their utmost to put the flames out, and they worked tirelessly to stamp out the oil that set everything ablaze. This was a difficult task for the Romans, as the oil stuck itself to everything it touched. Looks like meat's back on the menu, boys. Commander Bessus took stock of the situation and decided that it would be best to attack the walls immediately. He ordered the men to place ladders against the walls and climb them. What a great idea. Bessus was the first man up, and Procopius states that the army, seeing their 70-plus-year-old commander going straight into the fray, couldn't help but push forward themselves. Ah yes, the commander who goes straight into battle. What could ever happen? The Persians beat back the Romans with intense vigor as their weapons clashed, yelling from the air, and blood rained free. Bessus himself was knocked out during the fight and lay limp on the ground. That's what happens when a commander fights. A shout rang through the sky, and the auxiliaries, which are the tribes joining an army, from both Persia and Rome, ran straight to Bessus. The commander's bodyguards went and gathered around the unconscious general, protecting him with shields and covering his body with their own. This action fended off the Persian arrows from killing the Roman commander, and once the rest of the soldiers were made aware of the situation, they rained their own arrows onto the Persians to ensure that they would relent from attacking their general. Bessus soon awoke and was like an upside-down turtle. His heavy armor kept him pinned down, and as Procopius said, quote, "His body was not nimble, for this man was fleshy and, as I said, very old," end quote. From the ground, he directed his bodyguards to grab his foot and drag him far from the wall. The bodyguards followed this order, and as they retreated, they were protected by other Roman soldiers, so as to ensure the downfall of their commander did not happen. He managed to make it to safety, and was pulled up to his feet. Then, Bessus went back into the fray once more and climbed back onto the wall. Seeing that the Roman commander was making his way back onto the walls, the Persians became terrified and begged the Romans to give them some time to pack up, to leave Petra, and hand over the city. Bessus was not Dagestios, and he knew that this would be a ploy to strengthen the walls once more and further entrench themselves within the fortress. He merely said that the fighting was unable to be stopped, and if they wanted to talk, they'd have to go to another part of the wall of his choosing so that they could negotiate. The Persians disagreed, and the fighting became fiercer. Another thunderous sound filled the air. A wall the Romans had been digging under finally collapsed. This disrupted battle along the walls, and both armies rushed to the new opening. The Romans had superior numbers compared to the Persians, so they were able to push forward easily and continued pelting them with arrows to impede their progress. At this new location, the battle shifted once more and was stuck in a stalemate as they attempted to break through and the Persians attempted to repulse their enemy. Then, Ioannis Gouzis, one of the commanders from Armenia we have seen time and time again, took a contingent of men with him and ascended the walls. He and his men overpowered the guards. Gouzis impaled one with his spear and managed to let the Roman army through. The Persians on the wooden towers we spoke about had remained busy, and they brought many more pots of Medea's oil with them up the tower to burn up the siege of engines and any men who came through. As they poured the flaming oil down onto the Romans, a large gust of wind blew and brought oil against the tower. The oil stuck to the wooden beams, and as the Persians set the oil ablaze, the tower found itself in its path. The Persians did not realize their mistake, as smoke had filled the battlefield beneath them. The battle raged, and the Persians were persistent in defending Petra. The flames rose along the tower legs and reached the remaining pots. There was an explosion, and the tower lit up to the high heavens, burning every Persian inside alive. The tower collapsed against and over the wall, and charred bodies fell out, revealing themselves to both the Persians and Romans. This distraction provided the opening the Romans needed to enter the fortress, and the men fighting at the new opening poured through. So began the slaughter. Any Persians that could flee ran into the Acropolis and used it as a stronghold, and the Romans made prisoners of anyone who they did not kill. However, in the fighting, our friend Ioannis Gouzis, the Armenian commander who had made several feats of valor that changed the tides of multiple battles, fell in combat. As he had entered the city, one of the Persian auxiliaries grabbed the large stone and tossed it against his head. This just left the force that refused to surrender left in the Acropolis. On to phase two. To connect with us, feel free to find us on social media under @history_Georgia or on Facebook at The History of Sacramento, Georgia. Our intro music is Bindi Speria Sopeli by Zedashe. They will be touring the US in September 24, so keep a lookout for them. To help this podcast continue, please feel free to subscribe to our Patreon or donate via Ko-fi. The links are in the episode description. If you would prefer donating something a bit more tangible, we also have an Amazon wish list for you to peruse. But the best way to help us is via an review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast host, as it goes a long way with getting the word out about the show and helping us reach new people to learn about Georgia. Madlaba na nachmamdis, and thank you for listening to The History of Sacramento, Georgia. See you next time.
Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East, the very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.